Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. It's 8 o'clock. It's Thursday morning, July the 6th, 2023. Good morning, everybody. I'm Scott Micklin. Thanks for tuning in to KSJE 90.9 FM over the air, of course, right here in San Juan County, New Mexico. In Durango, Colorado, you're listening to us, we know, at 103.3 FM. And if you want to be anywhere else on the planet and tune in, just go to our website, ksje.com. Or if you're near a smart speaker, ask it to play KSJE. Good morning, everyone. We're glad to welcome you and also our viewers, because this is a video viewing program, a visual radio program from KSJE. So we welcome our viewers who are watching on the KSJE Facebook page and our YouTube channel. So thank you all for joining me this morning. Coming up in the next few moments, we're going to be talking with archaeologist Paul Reed about the ongoing topic of protecting the Greater Chaco area here in New Mexico. There's been some recent news about that, of course, and we'll get Paul's insights on what is going on with that and more in the next few moments right here on KSJE. So stay tuned for that. Then later on this morning, we'll be checking in with folks from the city of Aztec, and another way to celebrate the Aztec painted pianos. Rosalind Fry will be here talking a little bit about their next event coming up a week from Saturday at the Aztec Museum in Pioneer Village. So stay tuned for that coming up today at 8:50 a.m. on KSJE. Mick S. will be here roving with the arts. He is playing some music from Strauss today, so we hope you'll stay tuned for that as well. And we want to remind you about our latest On the Road program, which is now available to be watched on Facebook and YouTube. Into the Woods. We were out at Into the Woods at the Lions Wilderness Park Amphitheater, and that is the latest production, which will be on stage throughout the month of July. Opening night is tonight, so you can go take a look at the show before you go and check out Into the Woods on our KSJE On the Road program. Don't forget, you can also connect with us on our Twitter account and our Instagram page, and if you're a podcast person, we invite you to connect with KSJE wherever you're already listening to podcasts and maybe discover a new program that you may have missed. Outside our studios here at San Juan College right now, sunshine, 64 degrees at the moment, another hot and sunny day here in Farmington, the high reaching 96 degrees this afternoon, clear tonight with a low of 62, maybe a bit windier tomorrow. A fire weather warning is already up for tomorrow, with wind gusts up to 40 miles per hour perhaps on Friday, with a high of 96 again tomorrow, overnight low of 61, 96 again on Saturday, 97 on Sunday, maybe a thunderstorm developing on Monday with a high again of 97, 98 by Tuesday, and we may hit the triple digits by the end of next week. 100 degrees forecast for a high. Back with my guest with more in just a moment. This is KSJE. KSJE is supported by San Juan Regional Medical Center. The caregivers of San Juan Regional Medical Center are committed to bettering the quality of life, health, and care of individuals, families, and our communities. Life is their sacred trust. Better is their mission. Here is their home. San Juan Regional Medical Center, improving the health of the Four Corners since 1910. KSJE is supported by the Harvest Food Hub, featuring local produce and goods located at 310 West Animas Street in downtown Farmington. The Food Hub is open Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6:30 p.m., Saturdays 11 to 3. The Food Hub accepts all forms of payment, including SNAP. SNAP recipients receive 50% off all produce. Weekly, bi-weekly, and monthly farm boxes will begin June 22nd with a discount farm box available for San Juan College students. sanjuancollege.edu/harvestfoodhub.
Back here with my guest this morning on KSJE, archaeologist Paul Reed is joining us once again from his home in the Taos area. And Paul, good morning. It's good to see you. Welcome back to KSJE.
Thank you, Scott. Good morning to you. I'm so glad to be back on with you.
Thank you. It's nice to have you on, of course. And so we want to talk a bit about some of the news that's been in the news about Chaco Canyon, The protections for Greater Chaco, as we have said on this program numerous times, the park itself is protected, but a lot of the discussion is about the area around the park and kind of protecting those vistas and landscapes and other sites, right, that may be outside of the park boundary. And that's what I know you spend a lot of time and effort working on and talking about with your colleagues around the country, around the world.
That's right, Scott. So we've been working and sort of promoting this protection zone of about 10 miles in several sort of overlapping zones around Chaco for a few years. And, you know, we're closely with Pueblo partners, the All Pueblo Council of Governors, individual Pueblos at Zuni and Acoma, other groups, and, you know, as well as conservation partners. And really, you know, until very recently, the Navajo Nation was an active partner in this as well. So, right, we were out a couple of weeks ago to have a celebration of the withdrawal of the land, you know, through a secretarial order by Secretary Deb Haaland to protect this zone, and, you know, something that had been really well vetted over an almost 2-year process. And the road is, you know, as folks are probably aware, reported in local media, the road was blocked off by local Navajo allotment holders and some other folks who came out. So, yeah, definitely controversial.
Right. We're seeing a story really, on the screen right now, Paul Reed, from Mexico Political Report, just to mention the media, some of the media coverage. Of course, it was covered in a lot of places, but that was Interior Secretary Haaland who was here that day, right, to kind of celebrate this effort that she had made, but had to kind of move her planned celebration back to Albuquerque because of these protests.
That's right. I was driving out that morning and started to see some traffic coming back out of, you know, the area to get into Chaco on the road. And then, you know, a large parking lot essentially full of cars. So I went down and, you know, kind of saw what was going on. And right, ultimately, Secretary Haaland decided to shift the event to the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center back in Albuquerque. You know, and of course, the country has a strong history of people having their voices known, you know, bringing their voices, and sometimes, you know, in ways that other people don't necessarily support. But freedom of speech, protesting, a huge part of what we have the right to do in America, and, you know, always well, we hope.
Right.
But this disrupted an event that, you know, again, had been very well vetted and gone through a process. So anyway, yeah, it's at this point, though, the order is in place and the lands have been withdrawn. And again, just to be real clear, these are only the federal surface lands that are taken out of potential oil and gas leasing.
Right. And that's significant and important to make that distinction, right? Because this is an area that is called the checkerboard area, right? Because there are lands
right.
that are applied to lots of different jurisdictions in this area, right?
Well, right. And this is, we're talking about a large area, you know, in this 10-mile zone, and the land that's actually withdrawn from, you know, the federal side, the BLM, is about 340,000 acres. So we're talking about only 20% of the land out there. And the other portion of it, the 80%, is there's state lands that have been withdrawn from oil and gas leasing, state trust lands, there's private, and there's a whole lot of allotment lands which are still available for allotment holders to lease and to develop and do, you know, anything that they have the right to do on their own lands. So I think some of the controversy, honestly, you know, relates to a misunderstanding about what this federal order actually does and what it doesn't do. So yeah, and that's, unfortunately, bad information gets out into an area, sometimes through media outlets, et cetera. And then it becomes really difficult later to have the conversation and say, folks think that they're being, you know, stopped from developing their lands. And in this case, you know, that's absolutely not true. So.
Right. And we had heard, I think everyone had heard that some of these maybe allottees in the area, you know, get some revenue from the development of oil and gas on their land. And so they were maybe concerned that this might stop that, those revenues from coming to their families and things like that. And you're saying that's not the case with certain aspects of this, right? Because if it's tribal allotments or things like that, non-federal, it wouldn't be affected by this federal ruling.
Exactly. And, you know, those income flows are going to continue. This order does not affect any current leasing on any land status, BLM, allotment lands, private lands, state lands. It doesn't affect any of that. So, unfortunately, I think that, that again, there's just been a lot of misinformation and perhaps disinformation that's gone out with numbers thrown out about the loss of income to families who hold allotments. And, if there is, those are numbers that are essentially made up at this point, Scott, because all the leases that are ongoing, the revenue flows for folks getting royalties from developments on their lands, none of that will be interrupted, at all. So, the potential for future leasing depends entirely on the oil and gas market and, many other factors. Right now, with oil at what, $70 a barrel or something like that, this area is just not economically feasible to develop. And as we were discussing a little before the show, the Permian Basin in the southeast corner of our state is, one of the top producing areas in the country. And but it's a, they're getting into different resources down there, and it's again not economically viable at this point. What we have talked about for a few years, saying, well, then let's just protect this area because it is special. There's not a whole lot of areas like this anywhere really in the world, but especially in the Southwest and in the West. So let's just take this action and protect some of these land, some of this land, and it's not going to impact anything else that's going on. So having a little bit of an issue with the audio, unfortunately.
Oh, Paul, sorry. Can you hear me now?
Oh
That was
it's
probably my
yeah, I
own.
apologize to folks that
No.
my internet has been very stable until the
That's all
last
right.
couple of hours, so
That is
apologies.
that that could have been an issue at our end, so we won't worry about it. But my question to you is going to be about maybe the different measurements or mileages that have been put about with this protection area. I think maybe 10 miles is the one, 5 miles is another, things like that. Is that maybe part of some of this? Maybe that's muddying the waters a little bit, that there's not a consensus on a sphere of protection around the greater Chaco area from some of these groups?
Well, yeah, I definitely think it's been considered. We have been talking about a 10-mile zone, as have the All Pueblo Council of Governors, other environmental groups, other folks, on the preservation side. We've been talking about this since 2016, literally. And Navajo Nation had buy-in for this. So that's one of the things that makes this a little bit difficult, I think, on the understanding side. Two prior Navajo Nation presidents, President Begay in 2017 and President Nez in 2018, attended meetings of the All Pueblo Council of Governors where the 10-mile zone was promoted as a way to protect these resources that all indigenous people, and many others care tremendously about. So, that alliance had been set up. In 2020, then the Navajo Nation started to, backpedal a little from that position through their council. At that point, President Nez was still in office, made no public statements. With the new Navajo Nation president, Nigrin, he's come out and said, we don't want this zone of protection. So, and the Navajo Nation had proposed 5 miles, but then had withdrawn that as a serious proposal as well. But that did, allow or cause.
Oop, we may have lost you for a bit there, Paul Reed. No, he's back.
Anyway, yeah, apologies. I was just kind of talking about the, some of the changing positions on this. Navajo Nation had previously supported the 10-mile and then went to a 5-mile, with a resolution they passed in their council, and then had come out recently and said, we don't want any sort of a protective zone. So, opinions change. We understand that. But I think that the big point here is that no existing rights are being affected by this, and future rights for allotment holders to lease their lands, develop their lands, really do anything that they're allowed to do within the context of their land status, all those rights are in place, and I'm not sure we can sort of emphasize that enough with a lot of the other sort of counter narratives that have floated around.
Right. Understood. And as you mentioned, right, with the change of administrations and maybe politics a little bit maybe plays into this, not just maybe on the Navajo Nation, but elsewhere as well. Some folks may feel that Secretary Holland maybe made this declaration and decision maybe a little premature because there wasn't maybe the buy-in at a government level, government to government level from the Navajo Nation. I don't know.
Well, you know, I've definitely heard that opinion, Scott. But again, this is a process that started, you know, under a prior Navajo Nation administration who had, you know, been informed, meetings were held.
Right.
And, you know, when political change happens, it could be a challenge for sure to have the new leadership come up to speed on issues. But, you know, I am going to push back on the notion that this wasn't vetted. You know, this has been discussed extensively. There have been meetings at the chapter level, you know, in Greater Chaco where the zone is being proposed. So I think there's been a whole lot of public discussion about this. So I don't think it's necessarily a complete narrative to say this was sprung upon people suddenly. You know, the process that Interior went through unfolded over almost 2 years. So, you know, there was many opportunities for different voices to be heard.
Right. I hear you, Paul. And I know you and I have talked about this extensively on this program. So that just tells you how much this has been in the news, in the public mind over the last few years, because it has been a conversation that we've had a few times together on this program. So I certainly understand that. What's next, do you think, for this issue? I mean, it's an issue. We have this in place by the secretary. Do you think some congressional action may make it more permanent? Is that something that could protect something like this from being overturned by a court or something somewhere?
That's right. You know, I think we've talked earlier this year that, you know, there's been a Chaco bill that's gone through different steps.
Oh, we've lost you a little bit again there, Paul, but maybe you're back now.
Sorry. I'm trying to sort of monitor that.
That's all right.
There was a bill that cleared the U.S. House in October of 2019, didn't progress in the Senate, and then was introduced, you know, later in time. And that bill has been reintroduced now in 2023. So, you know, so there is some legislation that folks are trying to get through. You know, at this point, the 10-mile withdrawal zone is in effect, again, just for the BLM lands. You know, so we would like to have a more permanent solution on this. And again, I mean, I think that it's probably, you know, overly simplistic to say this is preservation versus development. And, you know, so many times things get rendered, I think, overly simplistically. And what we're talking about is preserving sites that are irreplaceable and deserve protection, but not impacting other people's rights to develop their land. So, you know, I think this is basically what we're seeing, you know, in our state and in the region and across the West is just the need to balance these different alternatives and our different needs. And, you know, I do think that the 10-mile withdrawal is a good compromise as we have it in place. And again, we'll see what happens, you know, with the legislative side, because that's kind of its own animal.
True. Very true. But that would be the way, I guess, forward, right, to be permanent in its in the protection of this area. And I guess the more extreme measure would be just to expand the boundaries of the park 10 miles. That doesn't seem reasonable or logical, but I guess that's another extreme way to do what you're trying to do. But that would include all land, wouldn't it?
Right, right. And park expansion is not something that, you know, the groups that I work with, you know, obviously my own organization, Archaeology Southwest, and our tribal partners and other environmental partners, no one is talking about, you know, park expansion. So,
right.
You know, we're just trying to get an additional layer of protection on sites that don't have a whole lot of protection at this point. And again, trying to do that, respecting the land statuses that exist. You know, and as we've talked, Scott, this checkerboarded area with, you know, land held by one group and then another and private and state is a management challenge for all these agencies. And there have been groups set up, in fact, to manage, and cooperate on some of these issues. So, and I think a lot of dialogue in that realm is very important.
Right. Very true. Well, yeah. And if you look at any kind of a map, it is exactly what it sounds like it is. It is a checkerboard area of different squares allotted and assigned to different jurisdictions for management and whatever, some private, some tribal, some state, some federal. And, if you don't know where you're standing, you may be under various different jurisdictions, whereas one step in either direction, you could be under a very different set of rules. And that's what keeps people on their toes, literally and figuratively.
That's right. And, folks who've been out there know it's not like every section or quarter section has a fence and a real clear boundary sign.
That's so true. Very true.
Know, it does help if you want to be out there trying to, enjoy public lands and not get into lands where you don't have rights, to just, be aware of the land status and get good updated GIS information on your phone or your unit, for sure.
Very true. Very true. Well, Paul, in the minutes that we have remaining this morning, is there any other updates you can provide about what you're doing this summer? I know in the heat of the summer, I imagine you try not to do as much field work as you do maybe when it's a little bit more hospitable for being out in the hot sun.
Well, it is funny because I'm actually going to Chaco Sunday to work on a project that, I think we can talk more about, on a later show. But we're doing an assessment of Diné or Navajo folks using the Chaco landscape, over a period of several hundred years, from about the mid 1600s into the early 1900s, when the monument, became a thing in 1907. So, and it looks to be, 105 potentially down there. So,
well, good luck with that.
This is the region we live in.
That's true. Well, and it's work that you love, so it probably doesn't seem like it's such an inconvenience when you're doing what you love, I suppose, right? Even when it's 105, 107 degrees.
No, definitely not. I mean, Chaco is such an amazing place. So many different amazing connections for, many of our indigenous groups in the Southwest, and just the landscape itself is remarkable. You stay hydrated, do all the smart things.
True.
Try not to work too hard in the sun, all
right.
Those good things. So
that's good. Well, can't wait to hear about it when we talk again. But in the meantime, I guess going back to our original conversation about Chaco and the protections of Chaco would be that, the one thing that it seems like everybody seems to agree on is at least the idea of protecting the park, of course, but also the area surrounding the park to a certain degree. Is that what you kind of find? At least there's maybe a little bit of consensus on at least the efforts to protect this area, and just how we go about doing it is where we find these differences of opinion?
Right, exactly. I think it is more in what we might call the methodology and not the philosophical side, which is we need to protect special historic and cultural places that exist from the indigenous past and from the rest of America's very rich history.
Very true. I think that's true. We may have lost you again for a minute there, Paul.
So anyway, I was just saying, I think there is consensus to protect the special places from the indigenous past and from the more recent past of other groups as well. And we have dialogue in America. We talk about things. So I think we'll continue to discuss the issue and really try to get all the opinions aired and, continue to work to bridge some of the differences.
Very true. Well, and as we've learned from our conversations here too, Paul Reed, even though the Navajo Nation certainly has the area and lives, people from the Navajo Nation live in the area most adjacent to, nearest to Chaco Canyon, it certainly has linkages to other Pueblo groups and other Native peoples throughout the Southwest that we have heard about and remains a really important place for those people as well. And so any of these conversations really has to involve these greater numbers of people because they feel a real connection to it as well.
Right. That's exactly right. Chaco was founded by ancestral Pueblo people many hundreds of years ago, and there's a deep history there. And I think Pueblo people would say, if as I've heard it from colleagues and friends, they have deep ties to Chaco and have a great deal of concern about how sites are managed and how areas are protected. You know, the other thing too as well, Scott, is there's a diversity of opinion amongst the Navajo folks who live out in this area. Many are in fact in favor of protecting a 10-mile zone. So part of what's gotten into the media with, you know, the blockade that happened and some other things is the suggestion that this is the majority opinion, you know, of Navajo Nation folks. It's the Navajo Nation government's opinion, you know, at this point that, you know, this is not a good thing to see go forward. But many people out there do support protection. There are on the ground groups like Dene Care who care a lot about protecting the land. So, you know, again, diverse opinion, and, you know, we need to get all those voices into the media. And I think the article from the New Mexico Reporter really does that well, and some of the other press coverage as well. So I would encourage listeners to, you know, dig into these articles if they want to know more and do a search on, you know, what happened and all the events over the last couple of weeks. Because there's definitely more than, you know, we can even talk about here for sure.
Right, right. Very true. Very true. Well, Paul Reed, I always appreciate you bringing all these topics to our consciousness and being able to talk about them and share these opinions with our audiences. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Scott. A pleasure as always to be on. And, you know, hopefully some of the internet problems will depart before our next meeting.
Well, we'll hope so, but it is what it is. But it's always great to connect with you no matter how stable the connection. So great to see you. Thanks, Paul. That is Paul Reed from Archaeology Southwest and Salmon Ruins talking with me this morning on KSJE. Back with more, of course, in just a moment. This is KSJE Farmington. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.